Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. What birds will people see at their feeders 60 years from now? According to a new study from the U.S. Geological Survey, they could be different from the ones we see today. Climate change and land use changes could have an impact on the ranges of bird species, with some birds losing a significant amount of their current U.S. range and others nearly doubling their ranges. Terry Saul is the author of the study. He's a research physical scientist with the USGS Aero Center in Sioux Falls. Since 1993, he's been involved in the mapping, analysis, and modeling of land use and land cover within the USGS. He's also author of the South Dakota Birds and Birding website, which features some of his bird photography, and he joins us on the line. And Terry, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Good, Carl. Thanks for having me on the show.
Now, what was different about, or what is different about this study compared to other studies that look into the future distribution of birds in the U.S.?
Well, there's actually quite a bit of work in this field, and there's a certain type of modeling called climatic niche modeling that uses climate data that's projected out into the future to look at potential impacts on birds. One of the most well-known of these studies to come out recently is Audubon, that came out with a climate and birds report about 2 months ago that modeled over 600 species in the United States and looked at the impacts of climate change. And what they found was that about 300, or about half of the species, had the potential to lose over half of their range due to climate change by 2080. But one of the issues that a lot of people haven't looked at is land use. And if you look around South Dakota, from eastern South Dakota with the heavily cultivated land with soybeans, corn, and other crops, to the way that land's managed in the west with rangeland, I mean, that has a very big impact on bird species. And as somebody interested in both land use and in birds, what I wanted to do was take a look at not just climate, but try to look at what are the impacts of projected land use going out into the future.
And how are you able to project the changes in land use and land cover?
We have a model that we developed here at the USGS AROS that takes remote sensing data, so satellite data and other data sources, and we use that to get a good idea of what's happened historically in a region and help us to project out into the future. And one of the things that we like to do is to try to stay consistent with some of these large global studies that are going on. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, produces periodic reports on climate that are used in scientific studies across the globe. And what we did with this work was we developed projections of land use going out into the future that capitalized on this work from the IPCC and developed land use projections that are consistent with not only their climate projections, but also their projections on population, on energy use, and on land use.
Did using this data, the land use and land cover data, did that result in different projections than some of these other studies?
Very much so. And, you know, one of the things that you see if you look at a climatic niche model is you see these that they tend to predict broad overall shifts in range. And so the Audubon modeling, for example, you'll look at individual species and you'll see that it may have shifted overall on average about 150 kilometers to the north. But what those models tend to show are very broad bands of change without a lot of detail. And so by adding the land use data, you're having the benefit of increased detail and also more relevance to land managers and those that actually can influence the potential distribution of a species out into the future. And so just for an example, in South Dakota, you know, there are several species that are predicted to shift to the north that may not be impacted by climate change, but are impacted by land use change. One of those that's in the paper that I modeled, for example, is the fruginous hawk. And the fruginous hawk is a very large raptor of the western United States. It's found throughout western South Dakota. And from a climatic perspective, the Audubon projections and my projections, they don't show an overall shift out of the area due to climate change. However, several of our scenarios that we ran out into the future from a land use perspective show quite a bit of expansion in agricultural land, and for a species such as a fruginous hawk that really depends on large contiguous areas of grassland, that land use change can have a very big impact. And so we do end up showing a large decline in that species in South Dakota, which you wouldn't pick up if you didn't have that land use data included.
So different species of birds are affected and influenced by different aspects of changes in habitat than say, other birds?
Yeah, and it's really difficult to predict and something that you have to take on a case-by-case basis. And, you know, one of the points that I guess I'd like to make about this paper is that, you know, we modeled 50 species across the conterminous U.S. to try to get a general idea of the relative influence of climate versus land use as you go out into the future. But really, to nail it down for an individual species, it takes more than just even climate and land use. And, you know, different species are able to adapt differently to both habitat conditions and climate conditions. And so this paper gives a first impression of the overall impact of land use. If you were going to look at an individual species, you'd probably want to go into even more detail and look at competition with other species, habitat needs, the timing of migration, and other factors.
For this paper, what was the base population that you used? Was there a certain year that you started with and went from there?
Yeah, we started with 2001 as our baseline, and one of the reasons that we did that was related to the land use data that we have, but it also relates to the bird observations that we used. And one of the things that makes our paper kind of unique is that we used data on bird species presence that is rather new on the scene. There's a project called eBird that's run from Cornell, and what this project does is allow anybody to enter sightings of birds into a database that's updated in real time. You know, for me, for example, for my cell phone, I have software on there where when I go birding, I can immediately, as I see a species, I can enter it online through the eBird database, and it's automatically recorded, updated, and allows people, both from a birding perspective and from a science perspective, to use that information. And that's something unique about this paper, too, is that it's a type of bird observation data that really hasn't been used a lot in the scientific literature.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're talking with Terry Soule. He's author of a new study recently published on the impacts of climate and land use changes on bird species going from 2001 to 2075. He's with the USGS Aero Center in Sioux Falls. Was there anything in this study that that really surprised you?
You know, I don't know if surprised was quite the term as much as alarmed. In that, you know, from the standpoint of land use, you know, what we've predicted are some pretty dramatic changes. And you know, we modeled three different scenarios going forward, but in each one of these scenarios, there tends to be quite a bit of man-made land use change. And you know, I guess from an overall standpoint, the thing that is a little alarming is both from a climate perspective and from a land use perspective is that there are going to be major shifts in ranges in these species, and it's shifts that are largely going to be dictated by climate, land use, as well as some of these factors that we didn't include in the modeling.
Now, you mentioned that you were alarmed for just the general public, for those of us that aren't birders. Why should we be concerned about what's happening with the bird populations?
I think it's just, you know, ecosystem health in general, and that, you know, it's almost as if we're running an experiment on the landscape from an ecological standpoint. I mean, we're introducing new conditions that are occurring so rapidly, both from a climate perspective and from a land use perspective, that it's difficult to predict how ecosystems and these birds are going to react. And you know, one example, a species that I modeled that really doesn't show a lot of change is a brown thrasher, and that's a bird that's fairly well known in the area. You see it in shrubby areas and parks and in yards. And from a climate perspective, from a land use perspective, we're not showing a lot of change in our modeling. However, as the species warms, there are indications that species like the northern mockingbird are moving northward, and there are studies that show the northern mockingbirds directly compete with brown thrashers and are resulting in local declines where the mockingbirds are expanding. And so you have these effects, too, that are very hard to predict of not only how land change and climate affects an individual species, but how these new combinations of bird species are going to interact with each other at a local level.
Well, that seems to make this a very difficult thing to predict then, because, you know, in addition to the changes in temperature and land use and habitat, then there's these other aspects you were just talking about, the way these birds interact with each other. How certain are researchers about the way the distribution of birds and their ranges will change over the next six decades?
I think what is being done right now in the field, you know, focusing on climate, focusing on land use, I think that's a wonderful start, and I think that does provide the baseline. You know how an individual species is going to respond to climate. You know, there are basic physiological tolerances that birds have to certain climate conditions. So from a climate perspective, you can predict what's suitable for a given bird. From a land use perspective, from a habitat perspective, you can predict what's suitable. You know, I think the devil lies in the details, and you know, that's why I kind of say I believe this is a first start, and in that, you know, if you're going to look at an individual species, you know, like the brown thrasher that I just mentioned, you know, we can provide an overall view of climate and land use and what's suitable for that species. But to really indicate how those populations are going to be impacted, I think it will take some more detailed modeling that's focused on an individual species.
How did you choose the 50 birds that are in this study?
Well, I do admit that part of it is personal preference, mm-hmm. and you know, as a birder that spends a lot of time out and about in South Dakota, I started out by doing a modeling in the Northern Great Plains. So there are quite a few species that are South Dakota specific in this paper. But then, as I expanded the paper and decided to do more birds that cover the conterminous U.S., what I wanted to do is make sure I just captured birds from each individual region and also covering a wide range of habitats.
Have you noticed changes in the bird species that you see just as a birder over the past few years, new birds that you hadn't seen before or others that maybe have become rare that weren't?
You know, I've been birding about 15 years, so I won't be able to speak to that as well as many of the longtime birders in the state. But there are many indications that, yes, you know, what you are seeing at your feeders is changing. You know, one example, I guess, from South Dakota would be the cardinal. You know, it's a species that has had its range expand dramatically over the last century, and now they're even being found out in the Black Hills. And you know, it's a species I think that many of us probably take for granted in southeast South Dakota because they are pretty common. But it really is an example of a species that's adapted and changed its range. Whether that's due to climate, whether that's due to available food sources from people putting out feeders or other factors, still needs to be nailed down. But there are many examples of birds that are already expanding their range or changing their range.
Are there some birds, you know, in looking at some of the predictions here that they gain quite a bit, they'll gain range, others lose a lot of range? Are there some birds that are just built to be much more adaptable than other birds, that no matter what happens, they'll survive?
Yeah, and you know, I think what the paper shows is that, you know, you have species like a red-tailed hawk or a great blue heron or a great horned owl. You know, those are all species that I modeled. You know, these are all species that are found throughout the United States, and they're found in a wide range of habitat types. They're found in a wide range of climate conditions. And, you know, for a generalist species like that, I do think that there's going to be a niche for them no matter, you know, how much climate change or how much land use change you have. But that's not always the case, and that's why it is very species specific. Some species are able to adapt. There's a Swainson's warbler in the southeastern U.S. that they just found has started to nest in these pine plantations, a very welcome development for a pretty rare bird. And, you know, and that's an example of a bird that's been able to adapt. Alternatively, you have a species like a Kirtland's warbler, which is another endangered species that's found mostly in Michigan and northern Wisconsin. That's a species that needs very young pine trees to nest, and it hasn't shown an ability to adapt to different land use conditions. And so once again, it really is a species-specific response.
Well, Terry, for you, how long have you been interested in birds? Has this been a lifelong interest, passion?
Actually, it's relatively new for me. I'm 47, and I started about 15 years ago. It started for me with photography. I happened to get a camera over Christmas in 1999, and for some reason, I just started pointing the camera at birds, and I haven't stopped since. But that's been the genesis of the interest in birds.
What is it you find fascinating about them?
Well, you know, I from a birding perspective, it's the people are wonderful. I mean, the birders in South Dakota are just such a wonderful group, and they're so enthusiastic, both from a birding perspective, from a conservation perspective, but also from a people perspective. And you really couldn't ask for a better group in terms of, you know, trying to help a new person get up and going in the hobby. And for me, it's getting outside. You know, it's getting outside, seeing this wide variety of species. And from a bird standpoint, what's always exciting is you just never know what you might see.
Well, Terry, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday.
Oh, you bet, Carl. I really enjoyed it.